You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Monday's Terrace Podcast. I'm Graham Thulis and today I'm joined by Craig Anderson.
Hi Graham, how's it going?
Yeah, not too bad at all, not too bad at all. Apologies if you hear noise in the background, but there's a man currently fitting windows to my house. I had windows before, but they were shit, so I'm getting some new ones. So apologies if you hear any...
I'm glad you clarified that you hadn't been living in a windowless property for 2 years since you've moved there.
Motherwell's tough living, mate. Tough living. Nonetheless, we have had a full card of Premiership action this weekend. So what we'll do is we'll blast through the six games and chat a little bit about each of them as we normally do on a Monday. Now, let's start off with one of the biggest results of the weekend. And it's very important that we're very careful to highlight, first of all, that St Mirren are going through what might be their best season in 30 years, which season currently in eighth position, which is good on them. And it's important that we're not in any way negative about St Mirren Football Club because people might get quite upset about that. So, I mean, yeah, as I say, the best St Mirren side in 30 years lost 2-1 to Hamilton Accies at home on Saturday as well, which as part of a triumvirate of terrible results for the Killiecraig, that wasn't really the result you were looking for, but certainly the one that Accies were looking for.
Yeah, I think the thing I know from this current bottom six is that you can't rely on any of the other teams to get your result because I think for both the flaky and they're none of them that very good. So I think you can't go around relying on other teams to get you the results. And I think we saw that. I mean, Dundee United, both of these games, just they seem to have gone, even though they're in a cup semi-final. Likewise, St Mirren haven't been playing well, so it didn't really surprise me that Accies went out and won this game. I thought it would maybe be a draw because they like drawing, but it didn't really surprise me when I saw them kind of racing into that lead. It felt inevitable. There definitely was going to be more twists in this relegation battle. And to be fair to the Accies, I think they've been an okay team since January. I don't think that, you know, they were awful in the first half of the season, but I think since January, you'd probably argue they're the third worst team with Kelly and Ross County having been behind them in that respect. So it's good that it's good from their point of view that they've actually probably got the win that I think some of their other performances maybe deserved before now. And it's come at the perfect time for them because it sets up. They've now got these two games against Kelly and County. And I think they pretty much know if they win both of them, they'll basically be safe. I don't expect them to win both games, but they've given themselves the possibility of doing it. A thoroughly deserving victory. I thought they were perhaps aided by some pretty poor defending on St Mirren's part and some poor goalkeeping actually uncharacteristically, but on the whole, you have to say it was a really nice performance.
It felt kind of watching the highlights and then watching a little bit more of the game. I think on multiple occasions this season, I think just about every single one of us has gone, do you know what, Cammy McPherson looks like a real player. He looks like a really, really sensible and good player for St Mirren, and we wish we saw more of him. And then we saw more of him twisting and turning on the ball in the middle of the park and giving the ball away. And the finish on that, how are we crediting David Moyo on that, or are we... Well, whatever you say, I'm going to either back it up or disagree with you, depending on which way you want to go.
I think he knows the ball's there and he tries to do something. Whether he wants to very deftly put it into that corner, which is the only bit that's out of the reach of the keeper, I don't know. But it doesn't hit off him. He does react to it. There were goals scored this weekend. Or sorry, it wasn't this weekend. I was thinking very specifically of Chris Kane's goal last weekend where he didn't know much about it and it just bounced off him. I think Moyo does react to the ball. I don't know that he tries what happens. I don't know what your take is.
My feeling is that I've always quite liked David Moyo as an Aki centre forward. I know he's not massively popular within the Aki support, given that he does lack quality and that there's no other way to put it, really. I think he's what you do get out of him, kind of similar to Callaghan in a lot of ways, is it more than anything else out of David Moyo, he puts a shift in for, and I realise that sounds like really sort of damning with faint praise, but he's relentless throughout the game, and particularly in this game as well, he looked right on it in terms of, do you know, see if I'm, even if I'm not involved in setting up goals or scoring goals, and then he was, I'm just going to do absolutely, I'm going to run myself into the ground here, which again, it sounds very dismissive of Ross Callaghan in saying that as well, and I really don't mean it to be. It's a real sort of praise of their attitude more than anything else. And that both of them this game were just absolutely relentless on top of St Mirren, and saw that. We'll talk about that a little bit in the Dundee United game coming up as well. But it certainly felt like the attitude more than anything else was there for Hamilton Accies, and on a day when St Mirren's attitude simply just wasn't there. They didn't offer a huge amount, and particularly the centre forwards. It was notable that in the last sort of half an hour when Lee Irwin came on, Irwin put in a better performance in half an hour than two players previously had put in over 60 minutes. Like he looked like he was trying to turn the game, and he offered vastly more than the other two had. Dennis in bits and pieces had looked like a reasonable player. He scored some really nice goals. Quenner, I have to hold my hands up and say I've not seen a huge amount, but it wasn't particularly impressive at the weekend either. But I thought Irwin was very good for St Mirren when he came on. McGrath got his goal with, again, a very Jamie McGrath sort of break of the ball and just absolutely lashing it into the net in a very satisfying way. But I do agree, I think Hamilton Accies were well deserving of the 3 points from this, and they could bring themselves back into contention on a weekend, which, and again, we'll talk about it when we get to the Killie game a little bit as well. It felt like a really sort of key weekend in the relegation battle. While this weekend wouldn't have decided anything, I don't think, it would have made it very, very challenging going into the last couple of games.
Yeah, I think the thing for me, you touched on that attitude and that desire. And I think when you are a team who has everything at stake and you're up against a team who've got nothing to play for, you just want to go straight out of the box and just be aggressive and basically make them shit themselves and be like, St Mirren and Dundee United have Scottish Cup semi-finals coming up next weekend. So County and Aki's both did the right thing of saying, right, we're going to be aggressive, we're going to get in your faces straight away. And a lot of these guys will start thinking, I don't know if I want to get injured here. And yeah. And it's something I think Kelly failed to do against Motherwell. Obviously, Motherwell less at stake. They don't have a cup semi-final to look forward to, just as we don't, which we're both very bitter about. But there is that difference, but I think it's what Kelly's performance missed compared to the other two. And talking about Lee Irwin, I think that's been pretty much him since he left Motherwell, right? Because he starts games and he doesn't do enough, and then you start to kind of write him off, and then you bring him on as a sub and he changes games, or he plays well, or he does something good, and then you're like, oh yeah, maybe there is a player there, and it seems to be in that cycle with him. But no, I kind of agree with you, and I think Hamilton are the perfect team when you're looking for design. It's why, you know, you can take the piss and say, you know, cockroaches and all of that stuff. But they are a team that is well set for this pressure situation. They've got the right type of players to deal with it when the pressure's on. They know how to kind of pull out performances, and they know how to grind out points, and they know how to get points through, not necessarily through quality, but through through desire. Although, having said that, I thought actually the quality of Callaghan's finish was probably a little bit underrated. I think it's not that easy to put in.
First off, it looks like he's just sort of swung a leg at it, but then again, looking back at it, he's done exactly what he's meant to do. He's put it where somebody else can't get it, which is, that's not swinging a leg at it, that's being quite deft in what you're doing.
And I think, as we've talked about plenty of times, if they get out of this a bit, he's going to play a big part in that. You know, okay, a lot of penalties, but some of these other goals that he scored, and he's scoring them at the important times. He's scoring winners, he's scoring equalisers, he's scoring goals that put them ahead, and that's what happened there. And I think the match kind of hinges on that. Christian Dennis has a chance, you know, early on. My feeling is, if St Mirren go 1-0 up at that point, probably they win, because Hamilton, when they go behind, don't necessarily win many games. But when that's kind of, I wouldn't even say it was a poor effort, but it should do better. And then, you know, it's not that long later that Aki's going to the lead. So it feels, at this point of the season, it's fine margins, and there's not any of this, you know, it'll cancel itself out later in the season. There isn't a later in the season. You just got to get the points, whatever happens. And it sets up a fascinating, little mini round of game, like two games in the space of kind of quick succession, kind of next midweek and weekend. And I wouldn't know how to predict this, to be honest, at all.
It's the way that the season is ending as well, is I find it very confusing to try and judge where anybody is, because with the Scottish Cup dates dropped in as well, it feels like there's been about three Premiership games over about a month and a half period, which is actually not actually that far off the truth, to be honest.
Oh no, Alexander won Manager of the Month, and I was like, I don't remember Motherwell like winning that many games, and then it was like, no, everybody only played two games and he won both of them, 1-0, and that was enough.
Didn't concede
a goal. And so it has been a bit like that, and I don't know whose favour that played into. I think we talked about this a long time ago, that Aki's and County both went out of the Scottish Cup early, and so they've had a lot of rest. Kelly have been playing a lot of games, and to me, and I still think it's a case that it's worked in Kelly's favour, because it gave Tommy Wright the chance to, you know, get a team playing how they wanted to play, while the other teams were kind of, I think you look at what's happening in like League One and League Two, and they're probably playing too many games in a space of time. But I think there is the opposite to say that I would have said maybe Aki's and Hamilton hadn't been playing enough games, and that they might kind of be, you know, not as sharp. But again, we didn't see that, so what do I know?
Yeah, and again, Aki seemed to have a list a mile long of injuries as well. So I think even just getting one or two bodies back, and that's been the case all day long. Just a final shout out as well. I thought Jamie Hamilton was very good in this game as well. I know Hamilton is seems to be one of these sort of young centre-halves that's quite highly rated. And on the sort of half an hour period that you get to see him before he gets put off, he generally looks okay. Unfortunately, the guy, he seems to find himself in some very awkward positions, but I thought against St Mirren again, he was very good as well. So yeah, so we'll move on to the second of the triumvirate of terrible games for Kilmarnock, which is Dundee United 0 Ross County 2, where we saw apparently Jordan White is once again turning at prime yard and collar, and County had the game won within half an hour. United looked absolutely disinterested in being there, which again I entirely understand on a season for Dundee United, which has been very much, I know United fans have possibly expected a little bit more, but given how, and I know they've said this before as well, but given how they've been over the last few seasons and the mess that they've been in at various points through being in the Championship, the series of managers again which they've gone through, again fine, that some of them were circumstance, some of them were just bad decisions, they've had a fairly sensible, uninteresting, unexciting Premiership season, which has seen them very comfortably safe and into a Scottish Cup semi-final. And from the player perspective, I can also kind of see, like, do you know what, we're safe, we've been safe for weeks now. Do we want to go out against this team of Highland Giants and get in a fight with them? No, I don't. I want to go and play in the Scottish Cup semi-final at the weekend. Would I be delighted if I was a United fan? Probably not. Because I've always, I always take the view that when you get to the Scottish Cup, and I know it's an odd season that the Scottish Cup has been compressed in about a 3-week period, you don't want to be spending a bunch of time losing games in the top six or bottom six. And I speak from experience of seeing Motherwell do it twice, of just not turning up in the post-split games and then expect to try to return after the after them to play in a semi-final or a final and just not quite managing it because you've not kicked a ball in weeks. So I was a little bit surprised, but similarly, that seems to be kind of United's season to date. Ross County, on the other hand, very, very good. Very, very, very energetic, very, very aggressive in everything that they were doing, whether it was set pieces, whether it was attacking United in possession. There was a 5-minute period where the ball was, Mehmet had it for United, he was playing out to centre-halves and full-backs who were then just clipping it forward only to be met by a Ross County defender heading it back in and going to contest it. And they played out about a 5-10 minute period of the game. A team which has been reasonably fragile defensively, Ross County, played out a 5-10 minute period where the ball just barely entered their half, which at this stage in the season when you need a result is absolutely brilliant for them.
Yeah, they just, we talked, it was pretty much the same game as the St Mirren one in terms of like, they came out, they fairly quickly built up the lead and probably, you know, in fact, definitely United were even less dangerous than Accies had been. So you're talking about a Ross County team that hadn't won in five games, it hasn't won a lot of games, to be honest, in the probably the last kind of 3 months, but they showed up, and again, it's about showing up, and it's what you've got. You've got characters that show up when it matters. And Jordan White, for all the criticisms we can have about his style of play or his his ability, he's a guy that you can, you know, if you want a performance, if you want a big game, he's a guy you can pin. You know, you can guarantee he will put in a shift. And they've got a lot of players like that in their team, Ross County, and that's, you know, they've maybe got some players who aren't like that as well. But you've got a guy who's going to lead your line, who is absolutely going to come off that park with bruises and going to come off that park, you know, with torn strip and all of that kind of cliched stuff. And when you're playing against that Dundee United centre-half pairing, which is quite fragile at the best of times, you're going to get joy out of that. And you saw that, and it probably wasn't a surprise that it was you know, it was him and Iacovite with the goals and the type of goals that they scored. Again, when you've not got probably the second or third best goalkeeper in the league and you're replacing him with a guy who was barely championship standard, probably was a second choice in the championship pretty much when he played in that level, you are going to see the drop-off. And while I'm not kind of pointing the finger at Mehmet for either of those goals, I feel like potentially Seagrave saves the second one at least. There's just all of these little things that add up to a Ross County win, and again they've got it all in their own hands now. They know, you know, go and win the last two games and we're safe, we're staying up completely. And I don't think they expected to be in that position when the games finished last week, because I don't think they would have expected to get back above Killie in the table so quickly, and yet there they are, and you can't really ask for better. Well, you can ask for better than needing to win your last two games. You could only need to win one of them or not need to win any of them. But you know what I mean? They've given themselves that opportunity that they just need to go out and beat a Hamilton team that are bottom of the league for a reason. And they have to beat a Motherwell team who'll be on their holidays in order to stay up. And I don't think they'll win both games, but they've given themselves the chance to do it. And I said the exact same thing. I don't expect either Ross County or Hamilton to win their final two games. I think all three teams will drop points still, but you want it in your own hands, and you want to know that you can just go out and win those games and be safe rather than having to, you know, have the radio on and be paying attention to what's going on elsewhere.
I'm just absolutely delighted that the recurring nightmare I had of Jermaine Hilton crossing to Jordan White with 3 minutes to go against Ross County in order to save Ross County and put Motherwell into the playoffs or relegate them will not be coming true. Because, I mean, you're absolutely right on White as well. For a guy who I realised I was fairly scathing of throughout the start of the season, it wasn't for a lack of effort from him. He would throw himself at things, he would try his very best, but it just didn't come off. And that, what it's a tale as old as time, essentially, of just not quite fitting at a particular place, moving on and getting on with things. So yeah, fair play to him. A huge result. Both of those absolutely huge results.
I think the thing to point out is like we've not been able to talk much about these games because I actually think neither of the games were very interesting because of the circumstances in which the leads came about. The team went into the lead early on. The other team, the teams who went behind, didn't have the same desperation to get back that they might always have. And it did kind of descend a little bit into a fairly predictable and fairly uninteresting both of them games. So, yeah, we're talking about the general relegation situation because actually, and I think this is true for nearly every game this weekend, to be honest, not that much interesting happened. Like, the stories were interesting. There's lots of drama about it. So it's... If those games are live, you'd be gripped by it if it was live and, you know, and you're watching, you know, you're watching the last 10 minutes of St Mirren try to get back into a game against Hamilton or whatever it is. But kind of to try and give a commentary on what happened when they didn't get back into it, well, not very much, to be honest. And that's just the way that both St Mirren and, sorry, both Hamilton and Ross County would like it.
Absolutely. And again, so we'll move on to a game that both of us definitely saw the full 90 of. Well, I definitely saw the full 90 of. Maybe you didn't. Kilmarnock came a cropper at Fir Park, where Motherwell seemed to have figured out how to play football once again, which is good with three games to go. And Kilmarnock seemed to be struggling a little bit. But it's okay because Tommy Wright would be the right appointment over Graeme Alexander, who would have been a joke of an appointment. So that's fine. That's fine.
Kelly weren't like back to the awfulness of the start of the season, but it was certainly, possibly our poorest performance, or our second poorest performance since Wright took over. I think the debacle up in Dingwall, which might be the thing that ultimately sends us down, was probably worse. But our away record is a big concern in the league. Just, I think that's six defeats in a row away from home. Given that next week or in 2 weeks' time, we've got a big away game that's potentially going to be the one that, you know, we have to go and win to try and stay up or whatever it may be. It was not a good performance, and Motherwell were thoroughly the better team. Kelly had chances. I think a couple of chances, you know, the one that Lafferty has the one that he pulls out an excellent save from Kelly, and also the one that kind of deflects agonisingly wide. You know, it kind of deflects, and it's one of those that's going in like slow motion and you're watching it. Is it going to trickle inside the post? And it didn't. But on the whole, Muller will deserve to win. Devante Cole was tremendous. He can be an inconsistent player. I think that's what Motherwell have probably got in terms of forwards. They've got three incredibly talented but also quite frustrating forwards in Cole, Long and Watt. If all three of those were ever able to click for a sustained period of time, you'd probably be talking about the sort of Higgs and Murphy Sutton days or whatever, or whichever combination of guys played at that time. They didn't play all together, but you know what I mean. The sort of Stuart McCall era of having that front three that you just were desperate to watch. They haven't always done it, but when any combination of them play well, Motherwell are a very difficult team to beat, and that's what we saw. And the thing for me was, yeah, you can point fingers defensively, certainly, and it's been the problem all through our season, or all through the last while, actually, has been Motherwell found it far too easy to walk through the middle of Kelly's team to get that first goal. And it's funny that the thing, when Alex Dyer was the manager, Kelly were too stodgy and didn't create enough chances, and Tommy Wright's had to essentially make the decision to take that handbrake off a little bit to commit more players forward. But the downside of that is, like, consistently we are so wide open, and once Motherwell got the ball back, it was so easy to just kind of drive through the middle. And then I think Rossi doesn't react quickly enough to the ball kind of falling there, and he is nowhere near fast enough to get out to try and block the shot. And so it's a kind of cavalcade of errors yet again. Every single goal, or not every single goal, but a lot of goals that Kelly have conceded over the whole season, to be honest, have been so avoidable. And then it brought us round to the other thing, which is that this season, I can't think of a single situation where we've snatched a point from a game. So when it went to 1-0, I wasn't expecting anything other than what happened to happen. We feel like a team that if we go into the lead, we can go and win 4-0. You know, which we've done a few times. We've absolutely battled teams, but I don't think we've gained a single point from the top of my head in the last 10 minutes of a game, for example, and that's really worrying when you get to this point in the season, especially when it's something that Tommy Wright's St Johnstone teams were pretty famed for. They did grind out a lot of points like that. From a Motherwell point of view, like, you would struggle to you look right through that team and say, like, everyone played pretty well. I thought, like, considering, I think the last three times Kelly have played Motherwell, I would say we've been by far the better team, and Motherwell have not looked up to much. but this one, it was very clear that Motherwell were a level above in terms of ability.
Yeah, we really seem to have hit a wee run of form. I think it's I'm right to say that since Alexander took over, we're actually top of the form table, which is for a side which at the time has been stodgy and been quite dull. And again, Alexander is manager of the month. The whole thing has felt just a little bit surreal, and I don't think we've been particular. At no point have really felt we've been particularly good. I thought this game up until about 40 minutes in, it kind of felt like it was a fairly even game with decent chances for both sides, and then it just felt like Motherwell kind of took control a little bit as well. As soon as Motherwell scored, felt super comfortable about the remainder of the game. We have very little to play for other than a collection of the guys we'll be playing to keep a contract or to stay at Motherwell or to get a contract elsewhere, which there's a reason to play in that respect. Somebody's got to play. If you want to make a living, then you need to keep playing for the rest of the season. And there was a positive chat about Devante Cole staying on at Motherwell and signing a new contract, which even if it's just for a year and we get a year out of Devante Cole, and it'd be a huge, huge benefit for us. But we are we do feel so flaky week to week. Our game is very much dependent on whether Chris Long decides he's going to turn up on a particular day. And I don't mean that in a dismissive way. I think he's a very good player, but I think you're quite right that he, like Cole and like Watt to a degree, sometimes they're just not on their day, or it's just not quite working. Their particular style of play doesn't necessarily lend itself to scrapping throughout a game. All of them offer something. On some days they offer just a little bit more. But it's interesting that we seem to have just sort of picked a system and stuck to it. Whether it's just the case of that it's been quite positive just now under the sort of end of Robinson's reign, it kind of felt like we shifted a lot of things and shifted a lot of pieces around the pitch in order to try and make something happen. It just wasn't really going to happen. Alexander talking about next season, saying that he's very much expecting to have a smaller squad. Our squad this year is absolutely ridiculous. I think we've played 36, 37 players or something, which is just ridiculous. I mean, added another, I think, for his first start, Sam Foley on the weekend as well, who again was very reasonable and kind of highlighted one of the players that we've been missing all season long, and just having a guy in central midfield who's just not doing daft things. I thought he had a very good game, but he's not really going to, I would be surprised if Sam Foley could play 40 games next season, so I think we're going to have to find an alternative option for that. It's going to be a big summer for us going forward. The fact that we are safe with games in hand, it was kind of a big surprise given how things were looking. To be as safe and as comfortable as we are and still playing reasonably well, you trick yourself into a sense of optimism for next season and forget the fact that the majority of guys, or a large number of the guys that are here this season that have made the season so disappointing, are going to still be here next year as well. So you kind of fool yourself into that. But
as much as, I mean, you've been, even in recent months, you've been fairly critical of this Motherwell team, like, sorry, even in recent weeks.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, like, if you're talking about the form since Alexander took over, so even if it is the same players, Do you not think you can get the same out of them next season? Certainly for me, I'm not expecting that Motherwell will be anywhere near the bottom next season. I don't think they're, you know, I don't think they're going to suddenly be challenging for third or anything, unless, you know, the signings go a way different to what I would expect from Alexander. I expect kind of, he's a manager who you expect to finish like sixth to eighth in the league, like his entire career. Like, it just seems like very much like what he is from everything you see from Motherwell, but at the moment, that's not the worst thing.
No, not at all. There are a lot of questions to be answered. Starting and just in between the sticks, we need to find out whether Carson's going to be back, whether he's fit to play a full season, whether Kelly's going to return centre half. We've got big issues, and that Gallagher, who on paper is our best centre half, it seems like McGinley has forced himself into the team and is going to be keeping his spot there as well, which I'm quite happy with. He's a very reasonable and very decent player. Midfield, we're going to be losing a lot of bodies. Up top, we'll presumably retain, or Tony Watt's under contract, we're hoping to retain Cole. Jake Hasty stays, don't know. Chris Long stays, don't know. In a lot of positions, there's a lot of questions to be asked. That said, a core of guys like McGinley, guys like Tony Watt, there's a real Stephen O'Donnell, guys who are sensible, good professionals going into next season, leaves us in a better sort of mentality, certainly, going into next season. This season there have been broadly no, with a couple of exceptions, there's no great questions about the quality of, that we have in the team, but there has seemed to be something a little bit off in terms of chemistry or mentality throughout the season, which Alexander seems to have sorted.
The thing with O'Donnell as well is, though, like, it's not unrealistic he has a really good Euros and then somebody comes in and buys him, because this kind of thing happens all the time. Like, it was, obviously one I would remember was the guy Gabriel Selassie from Czech Republic, who played really well at Euro 2012. And, like, all of a sudden, like, everybody was wanting him, and he went from, like, a nobody to being that. And then it was the USA fullback that Spurs signed. I think he's still kicking about in England. I forget the guy's name.
I would say Yedlin, but it's not.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant. Yeah, it was him. These types of guys, like, it's very easy to just have two or three good games at a major tournament, and suddenly it's like other teams are going all over you. Should Gary Breen getting linked with Barcelona after a World Cup was it the pinnacle of that? But yeah. So that's the Motherwell perspective. From the Killie perspective, everything hinges essentially on these two games or potentially four games. I've no doubt Tommy Wright is the right manager to keep Killie very safe in the Premiership. If we stay up, I've not got huge worries about next season, because he's got more or less a blank canvas. He can basically keep the players he wants to keep and get rid of nearly the rest of the squad if he wants, which I think is going to be the right approach. But and to be honest, he'll be the right manager if we do go down as well, in the sense that he knows how to win football games and stuff like that. But it's probably a pivotal month in the club's future, not even month, 3 weeks in the club's future, in the sense that we have the chance to establish ourselves, continue to establish ourselves in the Premiership, or I say 3 years minimum in the Championship. It could be longer than that. I don't imagine a team like Killie has much chance of bouncing straight back. It's possible we would probably finish in the playoffs, but it's a difficult league to get back out of when you're not a massive club. Even when you are a massive club, to be honest, it happens. So I think my gut is now telling me we're going to end up in the playoffs. I think we'll win one of the last two games, and that will probably get us into the playoffs. But what happens when we're there and we face what I think will be Dundee, I don't know, because I think we're a better team than them, but they've got good players and they've got dangerous players, and it's going to be a real, whatever the playoff is, it's going to be interesting, because it's always interesting. But I think Kilmarnock v Dundee would be a quite intriguing affair.
I'm very much looking forward to it. So we'll move on to the top six games, and we'll start off with one of my favourite things, which is a Scottish Premiership hoodoo. Given that teams play each other three or four times a season, the fact that teams can go through lengthy runs without winning games against a particular team is always very entertaining to me. Like us not, like Motherwell not losing to Aberdeen for like a 4 year period or something like that. But St Johnstone, or Hibernian, not beating St Johnstone at Easter Road since 2012, and I realise part of that's because Hibs are relegated, and that's part of the reason.
Well, that's their fault.
That's their fault. This is, shouldn't have been fucking relegated.
If you stayed up, you'd have more chances to beat St Johnstone at Easter Road.
Exactly. But I love these ones that sort of stick out as real outliers there, and a sort of semi-rotated St Johnstone side with Elliot Parish and goals. Scudding Hibs 1-0 at Easter Road. I know you said on the podcast, or you said in the group chat a while ago, that St Johnstone were the third best team in the country. The only sort of argument I'd make, I think you said it was third best, the only argument I'd make is that they might be the second best team in the country.
You've stolen what my line was going to be. It's the first thing I wrote down in my notes. As I said last week, St Johnstone were the third best, and you know, I'm going to revise that, because on the basis of this weekend, they could be the second best. Someone that last week I meant to comment on in their performance against Rangers was Michael Halloran. When he came on as a sub, I thought he had a massive impact in the game, and I didn't really get around to saying that. He started this game, and you saw from the off again, immediately, big impact on the game. And a guy who I think probably won't be at St Johnstone next season. I think they've got other options in that position, but he should stay in the Premiership. Like, I know he's maybe not had his best 2 years, to be honest, but he's definitely good enough for this level, and you can see that. You talk about Martin Boyle and what he does to defenders. Obviously, he's not as good as Martin Boyle, but he had the same impact there. he's quite physically strong and he runs at people and defenders don't know how to deal with him. And then Glenn Middleton, who's a player, I think, when he busts through for Rangers,
Is this the first time he's done something particular? I know he had a very good game against Celtic at Dermot as well, but is this the first time that Glenn Middleton has done something of particular note since he absolutely tore apart the Moscow right-hand side?
Yeah, I was going to say, did he not score the goal that put them in the top six? Or am I mixed?
But that was as
a sub as well, and after missing a gilt-edged chance to do the same beforehand. But he's definitely a talented player, but I think attitude has maybe been his problem. And if he's finally found somewhere where they can kind of sort that out, it might be wise for him to try and stick about there rather than going back to Rangers, to be honest. I don't think he's got a future at Rangers at all. I think there's about 20 players at Rangers, so you could say that, for who are mostly out on loan at the moment. And he's definitely one of them. We can't comment on that goal
It's an assist. You've got to give credit to the assist. It's a defence splitting pass.
Our weekly Ryan Porteous debate, and it's. I don't understand. Like, you can talk about Porteous. He does fancy himself as, you know, a footballing defender and, you know, pinging passes and stuff like that, but I think I talked about this before. When you're under pressure, when you've already nearly made a mistake, don't double down. When you've already nearly made a mistake, when you've already nearly fucked up, don't back down,
double down.
he doubled down to quite fantastic consequences. It was a nice finish from Middleton. Like, he took it before Marciano could really react to it, which was quite nice. And so, yeah, there's credit there, but it's a sort of reason, you know, and we have this kind of permanent, there's about three main topics that I think get covered on the Terrace WhatsApp group, which is Craig Fowler's prediction that our statement that Hearts were the fifth or sixth best team in the country, the endless debate about whether Ryan Porteous will be playing in the English Premier League or in Scottish League 2 in like 3 years' time, and I've now forgotten what the third one is, but anyway, those two, we'll stick with those two, and Gary Cocker typos for every single footballer's name in history, that was the third one. Those are the three main kind of topics, a little peek behind the curtain there, but Porteous, that was very much a swing towards the playing part-time football and working in a brickage yard or something in 3 years' time. It's just a sign of the sort of thing that he does all too regularly to be considered, for example, for a Scotland squad and things like that. Whereas if he could just cut a little bit of that out of the game, the things that he does so well, the things that make him, you know, be talked about in those terms in the first place, could stand out a lot more without him kind of constantly blotting his copybook.
Yeah, and I'm fully on board with Ryan Porteous going on and being the guy. I lean on the side of, I think he'll do quite good. Fucking hell, Graham. I think he'll do quite well in his career, and I hope he does quite well in his career, because for all the endless argument that Scotland only produces physical footballers, we don't really have that many physical centre-halves, certainly not in the same way that Porteous is physical and aggressive. And that's what I want a Scotland centre-half to be. That's to me, that's a centre-half that we are missing. And I do desperately hope that it's him, because he seems like a great laugh. And in addition, he has the raw attributes for that as well. But again, coming back to St Johnstone and kind of quite how good they have been, what I'm curious about going forward is that all of the big results they've had this season, and they've had a lot, and they've obviously won the League Cup already, they turned over Hibs without breaking a sweat in the semi-finals of that, which was one of the most impressive performances of the season for me, and that they just didn't, they were not fazed by anything whatsoever within it as well. Callum Davidson has put together a very, very competent footballing squad. It's a very interesting team to watch as well, and we saw at the weekend that he can change some bits and pieces out of that, and then they remain a good footballing side, they remain a good team, built on the sort of the solidity of the back three of Caird, Gordon and McCart, and then everything beyond that all sort of plays around that as well. And what I'm curious is going forward is that and all of the big results that they've had, and obviously with their win at Ibrox last weekend as well, they've always been the underdog for all of these. Going into the Scottish Cup semi-finals, I don't think it's unfair to say that St Johnstone are the favourites going into the semi-finals to win the Scottish Cup, which is a different proposition. It's a different thing you're being asked. Even in the League Cup final, you could ask 100 people, and to be honest, I think it would have been split down the middle in terms of whether they thought Livingston or St Johnstone were going to win the final. They certainly weren't favourites for it, and it's just a different mentality. It's a different thing to be asked going into that as well, and I'm very curious to see. Well, I mean, presumably they'll just do the same things and ignore it, because, I mean, they don't need to listen to anybody else and who anyone else is the favourite for it. But the expectation is now there in a way that it possibly wasn't for the League Cup and hasn't been for the league for a big chunk of the season as well. I do still think they'll go and win the Scottish Cup. I think they will do the double, and I think it's an absolutely remarkable achievement. And I think regardless of whether they even make the Scottish Cup final, Davidson's my manager of the season. I think he thoroughly deserves that accolade as a manager, and he's in his first season in management to do what he's done while not actually adding a huge amount to St Johnstone's squad. There's a handful of bodies he's brought in, but what he has done is make the absolute most of what he's got to his disposal and done it very, very well.
But the thing is, like, you can see he's obviously built on what was a very solid kind of spine, or a solid kind of, you know, he didn't take over a club in crisis or anything of the sort. He's taken over a team where Tommy Wright's had them basically performing exactly, you know, at that end of the table for such a long time. But he did put his own stamp on it straight away. He went with the back three, and he more or less stuck to his guns with it. He had a couple of kind of times where he moved into a four and stuff like that, but he's always gone back to the three. It took a long time to work, and now that it works, it really works. And so I think it's not, you know, yeah, you can say, okay, they played a back three at times in the past, but they definitely didn't play a back three with this type of system where your wing backs are more or less their attacking players. And, you know, you've got, it's just, I think there's been too many back threes in the league and stuff like that. And we've definitely talked about that a lot, but the two interesting, or there's been three tactically interesting, like, back three systems for me this season, which has been, St Johnstone's one, which I think is, I think they're the best coach team in the country, or them and Rangers certainly. You've got the Aberdeen one, which they've briefly had under McInnes, which is very entertaining, while they had kind of Scott Wright playing in the hole, which I think made that team, and the fact they had essentially two wingers playing wing back, and then the Hibs one, because it's very, very flexible. Everyone else that's tried to play a back three's been absolutely hopeless at it. But yeah, they're just a really, every time St Johnstone are playing, I want to watch them. I want to see what they're doing. I want to see, you know, they make a change to the team, and you're like, oh, I wonder how that player's going to thing. And then it was Brown coming in into kind of the Sean Rooney role, as I'm now going to rename, right wing back. And again, didn't miss a beat. It was just, yeah, we're just going to keep playing the same way. I think it's a good point you make about them not being favourites being favourites for next week. But I think what they've got is a fantastic attitude in the squad. I don't think they've got players who that will go to their head. Like, it doesn't seem like it to me. It seems like they're a very level-headed group. So I don't see it affecting them. They might lose. They might lose, but I don't think it'll be because they don't turn up. It might just be because a St Mirren team that we know are capable of bringing in a performance might finally do it for the first time in a couple of months.
Good. So we'll move on to Aberdeen against Livingston, which I've just realised I've spelt both Aberdeen wrong and it's got the score wrong in my notes. But
is it ABRDN or whatever they were calling company?
For some reason, I've got three E's in it. For some reason, I've got the Livingston one, but they did not. Of course, Aberdeen won at the Tony Macaroni. And I hope I'm not alone in this, but I'm really delighted to see Ryan Hedges back, because for me, he's one of the most entertaining players in the league to watch. Obviously, Aberdeen's form has been very, very poor, both goal scoring and on entertainment value, more than anything else. So Hedges back in the side is great for Aberdeen and great for people watching the league as well. Livingston remain thoroughly odd, and Callum Hendry might be something. I was confused at the time as Callum Hendry became a hot commodity in January, given that he looked okay for St Johnstone. They didn't seem particularly fussed on him heading on. But now that he is at Aberdeen, he seems to be scoring all sorts of different types of goals, which is every time you see a Scottish centre forward doing something like that, you immediately get a wee bit excited, because maybe he's the guy. Don't know, but we'll see. What I imagine we'll find out. He's certainly an interesting player.
I think he's not the most cultured footballer, Hendry. I think but you don't always need to be. He does have a knack generally of kind of stuff happening around about him in the box, and that includes scoring goals at times. And I think they could do worse than keeping him. Like, I think I mean, we were talking very glowingly about him in the kind of tail end Easton Johnston days, and then it just really didn't happen there at all for him this season. To the point of, like, I don't think they really were bothered when he left in January, obviously, and they were right not to be, to be honest. But at the same time, if Aberdeen can, you know, pay a wee fee or send a player down to Perth or whatever to make this permanent, I think they probably should, because out of the three forwards they've signed, he's the only one that to me has really showed up. And
Hornby showed up and then left again.
Hornby's just not very good.
He's not got it for me.
But the thing with Hendry is that, yeah, he feels like a late developer. He is a late developer because I think he's already like 22, 23 or something like that, but he still feels very raw. And he's a very interesting player, but he does offer a dimension. He's more similar to Cosgrove than any of the others, in the sense that he rumbles people about. He doesn't shirk away from a battle at that end of the park. And I think Aberdeen, for as long as I can remember, have had someone at the top end of the park who was a pain in the arse, and he's very much in that category. And I think they were value for this win. I think it was two fairly poor teams. I don't think it wasn't a classic. Yeah, and Livingston, I've basically, since that run ended, like the first result that ended that run seems to have just totally toppled the season, to the point where they'll obviously play St Johnston on the last day, but you'd now be surprised if they finish ahead of St Johnston. They look certain to finish sixth, which is a surprise the way it was going for them. And I think Emmanuel Thomas is the only thing that's kind of keeping them interesting, to be honest, this season. And he had a tremendous finish after the one that you mentioned from Hedges. And it's hard to know. Obviously, it's still a successful season, because when Martindale took over as manager, they looked like they were in danger of going down. And as it is, they got to a cup final and are nowhere near going down and could still qualify for Europe. It's much less likely than it was, but it's still possible. It's not been a failure, but there must be worries about where it's heading for Livingston, if, you know, given what they've been like since sort of February time.
As last season ended, you looked at the squad and you had guys like, particularly, and the most obvious one is Lyndon Dykes in there, who was just a guy of quality. And looking at the squad at the end of this season, there are guys in there who are good players, but there's nobody of that either sellable quality, and it doesn't really feel massively like there's somebody of that buildable quality either. It kind of feels like it's reached the end of the line for that, and I'm not entirely sure what they do with that. It feels like they've got a lot of bodies there, and it feels like they need a bit of a clear out and a bit of a refresh. And it'll be interesting to see what they do in the summer, certainly. I just wanted to highlight one other thing as well, which is Lewis Ferguson's block / tackle at the very end of the game as well, which Lewis Ferguson is what you want in the sense of similar sort of vein to Alan Campbell, is just what you want a central midfielder in your team to be. And a game which you're scrapping and holding on to a lead, and he's on his arse in the 6-yard box, just kicking at it. I've got the block in, and I'm just going to keep kicking at it until there's not a chance anymore. And it was absolutely brilliant. While Hedges' goal was very, very good in the game, my highlight of the game was Lewis Ferguson just kicking, snapping away.
I don't expect him to still be at Pittodrie next season, but I expect that they'll. And in some sense, it's weird to say. I feel like Scott Brown's going to be replacing him. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels like that's, which it is a weird thing to say, but I expect Ferguson, he's ambitious. You already saw that from he was happy to leave Ackies to go to Aberdeen in the first place. I don't think he'll be hanging around. If he is, he'll not be there more than another year, but I think he'll probably head south or somewhere else and try and make something of it. I think just the family he's from and stuff like that. You know, he's very well connected. There will be people putting a word in for him all over the place. He will find it a lot easier to make a move than other players will. And I think he's got. There are weaknesses in his game, or there are areas that he can still improve on. We'll put it that way. I think in terms of the kind of culture side of his game, he's not bad at it, but he can probably improve a little bit on, you know, passing and all of these kind of technical things, and probably a wee bit of decision making in the final third. I think, you know, awareness of what's going on around about him and all that, because I think he tries the kind of brute force option quite a lot, but if he can pick up that wee little bit of guile and stuff like that, but he's capable of that. You know, he's an intelligent player. There's a high ceiling for what he can do. And I think it would be the right time to make a move and maybe challenge himself a little bit, and, you know, maybe go somewhere where he's not going to always get a game where he has to work to develop his game. And I think he's got it in him to do that. So I think this will be it for him at Pittodrie, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Absolutely. And that takes us on to the final game of the weekend, a game with absolutely nothing riding on it other than a bit of bragging, and Celtic still managed to absolutely fuck it. The turntables have turned.
It felt a lot like those Rangers-Celtic games when Warburton, Murty, Keith Sheena were in charge, where with the roles reversed, obviously, where Celtic, they didn't play that badly. It wasn't like you would point at them and go like, look at these pieces of gross incompetence. They did create chances. There were moments, you know, they had a chance to make it 2-2, stuff like that. That these things that could have happened, but they didn't happen. And then a daft red card thrown in, and they just eventually going to get torn apart because they're just man for man across the park. The other team are better than them, basically. And that's what happened there. And everything right down to kind of a goalkeeper who's not that, he didn't do anything wrong, but he's just not good enough. And you can swap Scott Bain for Wes Fotheringham and stuff like that. It's just all of this. There are so many parallels. And I think for that same reason, and I think I've started to see it happening, I think Rangers should be careful not to get ahead of themselves, because it wouldn't take a lot for it to switch back around as well. Because I do think that they are miles better than Celtic just now, but Celtic were miles better than them 18 months ago. So there's something to be said for, like, you know, obviously, I mean, I'm not saying that the Rangers fans are quite right to be in it. And I was in the same position 2 years ago. When your team are doing that well, you're hubristic about it, and you should be, but don't, it'd be very easy for complacency to set in. And they should enjoy this while it comes, but they should also not be,
it's not for it. Nothing lasts forever. Nothing is
going to do 10 in a row, right? They've got something to build on, but I think a manager departure and a couple of key players going in, they could very much suffer the same fate again. But from this game, it was a very strong performance from Rangers, midfield to front especially. I think
Roy Kent was absolutely sensational throughout the game. I think it was, I can't remember who was it, somebody in the group chat was just saying, just gliding about, taking folk on, and it was his wee touch sending, was it Taylor, out for a hot dog as well. Just he was just a cut above every other player on the park for me. He was just very, very entertaining to watch and very, very impressive.
But yeah, I mean, beyond that, Roof, who's maybe not had the best last few months, or last couple of months anyway, but he got two goals and probably could have had more than that, and was really quite impactful on the game. Davis again, just a guy that at his age to keep playing the way he's playing. We've always known he's a clever player and all of that, and very much one of these binding players that really pulls a team together. When he's playing, the team are better, and as a whole, it's just that kind of ability to hold everything together. But yeah, you look through that Rangers team, Alan McGregor has pulls off a couple of really great saves at important moments, and then you go to the other side and Celtic players, too many mistakes, too many daft decisions, too many like pieces of rashness. Right from the start, they did not have enough in the middle of the park. They were getting walked through, and that was because you had the front of the three of Elyounoussi, Turnbull and Forrest were too high up. They were far too close to Edouard, which left McGregor and Brown very exposed. And then Brown on his own, very exposed after that, with Turnbull trying his best. And yet again, David Turnbull, I think, for being in a terrible Celtic team, has stood out. And certainly the last couple of Old Firm games, probably before that as well. But just in terms of his sheer ability on the ball. But yeah, they were exposed before the red card, and then after the red card, that was only kind of intensified, because actually at the other end of the park, that four were causing Rangers some bother. Like Jack Simpson had the torrid afternoon, to be honest, considering he was in a team that won 4-1. I'm not sure about him, but we've probably said we weren't sure about some of the other players that they've signed who've then gone on to do quite well. So you don't want to write them off yet, but it was a very curious game, I think, in the sense that Rangers won 4-1 and will still have some things to be negative about, and I don't think Celtic will still have like the odd positive here and there, but mostly negatives because they were shit.
I really, really, really enjoyed what's a 39-year-old Jermaine Defoe putting Welsh on his arse and making him look very, very like at no point with Defoe bearing down on him did Welsh look at any point look like he was going to win that ball or win the challenge or take the ball off him or defend it. Just as soon as you saw Defoe bearing down on it, it's a goal. Straight away, absolutely no hesitation. He is going to struggle here, and Rangers are about to score again unless Defoe puts it over the bar or something. But yeah, it was one-sided as well. To me, while Celtic were good in bits and pieces, Rangers had them at arm's length, and I was actually kind of surprised they didn't go and run up the score, because for me it was there to be done, and Rangers just seemed to be almost showboating and quite happy with just the fact that we're comfortably ahead of you, we're keeping you at arm's length, and we're doing fine. But that rounds off the weekend's Premiership action. We are off to record a Patreon as well, which is available for £2 a month, where I'm pretty sure I'm going to embarrass myself really badly doing a quiz about Motherwell. So do tune in and find out how little I know about the team that I spend far too much time talking about. And yeah, do enjoy that. Thanks very much for your time today, Craig.
Thank you very much, Graham, and thank you to all of the listeners who are listening to this for some reason.
Magic. We'll hear you all soon. The guys will be back on Thursday. There's £5 Patreon content going out every day, so do get in touch if you're enjoying it or not enjoying it. Enjoy the rest of your season, and goodbye. Bye, Craig.
Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.